Here's Andy Udman.
I say if he would return to raw milk, which is produced under proper conditions, we would avoid so many diseases in children, which also would clearly reduce the need, the apparent need for vaccinations.
Raw milk. Did you hear what he just said? That was amazing. The claim, at least, that if we fed our children raw milk instead of pasteurized milk, they might not have many of the health disorders that they have today. That is an incredible claim. Pam Colleen in studio with me this morning on London Today. Pam?
Well, it's not that far out of reach because research has shown, even recent research that's just been published over the last couple of months, and this was a research study that was done in Europe using, I think, several thousand children, and children raised on raw milk had tended to have less incidence of allergies and asthma. And considering that hundreds of people die every year from asthma here in Canada, I think it's worth investigating to see what it is about raw milk that is reducing incidence of allergies and asthma in children.
Folks, as I always say, when Pam Colleen is in, this is your captain speaking. Fasten your seatbelts. We are going to hit turbulence. And believe me, we're going to hit it this hour with claims like the one you just heard. And we're going to put up a large umbrella this morning with the label Frankenfood, which is a term that scares me silly. When I see industry starting to tamper with the very genetics of the food that we eat, I have visions of people with three eyes and four legs. I mean, I'm being facetious, but food controlled by industry is a pretty scary thought when you look at, well, just the name Monsanto, the effect of chemicals on our plants. It's getting scary.
Pam. Right. And it was in the movie The Corporation. If people haven't seen that movie, they need to see it. And basically, they were saying quite facetiously that if the corporations could control sunshine, if they could bottle sunshine and sell it, they would. This idea of controlling nature is not about health. It's not about feeding us. It's about profits. It's about controlling the food supply so that they can own the genetics of that plant or that animal and then render profit from it.
And this is a breaking news story, even as we speak. Tell us about Michael Schmidt. We had him on a couple of weeks ago. He's about to hold a news conference, even as we speak, in Owen Sound, pushing the idea of clearing the way to sell raw milk legally in Ontario, which you can't do now. He's been on a hunger strike.
Right. He's been on, I think he's on about day 12 of a hunger strike. And he's got a following of other farmers who are basically stepping up to the plate. And they're also doing hunger strikes to protest the recent decision here in Ontario, which basically found Michael guilty on 15 of 19 charges.
So here it is. We are, this is Thursday, October the 13th. That news conference is just getting underway. I reached Michael Schmidt just a few moments ago, and I talked with him about his hunger strike and the news conference that is just getting underway.
You're welcome.
Michael, tell us what you're doing this morning.
I'll be going to the Owen Sound District Health Unit, Grey Brew's Owen Sound Health Unit, and have a rally there in support of food freedom, food sovereignty in Canada.
Michael, your story is so well known by so many, but not by everybody. Summarize the crusade that you're on and the hunger strike which you are now on.
I'm battling with the government of Ontario and Canada since 1994 for a very fundamental right, people, that they can choose, in our case, that they can choose fresh raw milk instead of pasteurized milk. In most of the G8 countries, there is some kind of provision where people have access to raw milk, and Canada doesn't allow that. Canada has a total prohibition on raw milk, and more people waking up to the fact that, in fact, raw, pasteurized milk is hazardous for them, and so they want the freedom to choose. I have been charged. I have been convicted. I have been harassed by 25 armed officers and raided on our farm. And I have, for the last 14, 15, 16, 17 years, offered the government over and over again the option that we sit down together. how we can bring the black market of raw milk into the open. And so far, they have refused it, and that is why I finally decided, after a negative decision from the appeal, from an appeals judge who convicted me of 15 charges, that I will go on a hunger strike for responsible food freedom.
Let me ask you about your comment, which some may be hearing for the first time, that you think pasteurized milk, which is the milk that most of Canadians drink, is hazardous. What do you mean by that rather explosive comment?
There is more and more evidence that because of the heat treatment of milk and because of the way how milk is produced nowadays, people are less and less able to digest that milk, and they actually develop chronic diseases because of that. And that is why they are seeking more and more the raw milk, which reverses completely the effects of the negative effects of pasteurized milk.
What are the dangers of drinking pasteurized milk? And then we'll look at the dangers of drinking raw milk. But first, pasteurized milk. To most people, it is totally safe, almost straight from the hand of God himself.
Raw milk is very safe to drink if it is produced for human consumption. Most of the milk nowadays, raw milk, is simply produced for pasteurization. That means there's a different approach, how you produce it, how you manage your cows, how you feed your cows. But if the milk is produced for human consumption, then the milk is inherently safe to drink.
Okay, so you're saying raw milk is safe, but you are saying that pasteurized milk is hazardous. Most people would find that comment totally outrageous.
The reason why I say that pasteurized milk is hazardous, because we see an increase in lactose intolerance in chronic diseases related to pasteurized milk, and especially in a drastic increase of immune compromised immune system in children, increase in asthma in children. And that has been linked in major studies in Europe to the use of pasteurized milk. When we know that hundreds of children die of asthma attacks in Canada, and we can help with a properly produced raw milk, why are we not going that route? Why don't we give the option to people that they can decide for themselves if they want to drink pasteurized milk or if they want to drink raw milk? That is all that's all I'm asking for. I'm asking for the freedom to choose.
Michael, we had you on the air a couple of weeks ago, just after the courts decided against your cause. You have since taken some rather dramatic action to make your case. Tell us what you're now doing.
I have decided to go on a hunger strike in order to force people to wake up, to force people to understand that this is not a little issue anymore. It is about all our foods. It is about the farmer's freedom to decide to enter into a private arrangement with a farmer if they want healthy food. And the increasing dictatorship of bureaucrats on every aspect of our life and our health, it's becoming very dangerous, and that is why I decided to go on this hunger strike.
Okay, your news conference this morning. Tell us, give us some details and what your message will be.
The message this morning is simply a call for negotiations, a call for a constructive dialogue with those who claim to be responsible for our health. We are not demanding that everybody should be forced to drink raw milk. We are demanding that the freedoms in regard to our food are reinstated, which have been taken away slowly through undue process.
Michael, you're not one to draw attention to yourself, to your own health, to your sacrifices. You've been on this crusade for so long. How long have you been on this hunger strike?
It's 14 days.
Michael, your voice sounds strong, but how are you feeling and how is your health? How much weight have you lost?
I have lost 22 pounds by now. I certainly feel the effects of not eating food, but when you really look at the overall impact, it is minor compared to what the most of the people, you know, will feel down the road when their rights are taken away. And that is why I think it is such a crucial action in order to wake people up.
So there it is, my conversation with a farmer just north of London. This is in Owen Sound. This is like an hour north of London. A farmer, Michael Schmidt, in studio this morning with me, Pam Colleen. Pam, we're talking this morning about all of our foods now, which are so directly, so far removed from the days when we ate we grew in the garden.
We're changing the nature of nature. And we know that the more we touch food, the more we manipulate food, the worse it is for us. And I think what we can talk about here in relationship to our upcoming guest is how, you know, mutated dairy products have gotten over the last 100 years. And even down to our seeds, even down to our canola, our soy, our corn, all sorts of plant-based foods, and even animal foods like pig and salmon, which are being manipulated by industry, which are coming up with because of patenting, of course, that the industry can control these foods.
They're controlling them so that they're healthier for us,
well,
right?
That's what they claim.
Isn't that the industry agenda?
They make all sorts of claims, and they say we're going to feed the world with this technology, we're going to reduce the use of pesticides with this technology, and all of their claims have been proven to be wrong. They're just, I mean, it's just hot air that they're putting out.
Quick word about who we're going to talk to in just a moment.
Our upcoming guest is Lucy Sherratt, and she is the coordinator for the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network out of Ottawa, and she is relentless. She works so hard to educate Canadians and people around the world about what is happening here in Canada with our federal government vis-a-vis these biotechnology products.
Well, I want to ask her right off the bat when we come back in just a moment about Michael Schmidt's claim that if our kids drank real milk from the cow, not pasteurized, raw milk, we would have, what were his words?
Well, we'd all be a lot better off for it because we know our ancestors all consumed raw milk.
And
they would have all consumed raw milk.
Children would have stronger teeth and have a lot fewer diseases. That's an amazing claim. We'll ask our guest about that in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
I say if we would return to raw milk, which is produced under proper conditions, we would avoid so many diseases in children, which also would clearly reduce the need, the apparent need for vaccinations.
Most people would consider what they just heard outrageous, to claim that if our children today drank raw milk instead of pasteurized milk, we would have so many fewer diseases. One person who does not find the claim outrageous is Pam Colleen. And Pam, you brought along a guest today.
Right. We have Lucy Sherratt joining us here, and she is the coordinator for the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network. And she's going to talk to us about some new developments in our food supply that are pending based upon government decisions and regulations, of course. And it has a lot to do with the genetically engineered salmon and the genetically engineered pig, which is coming out of the University of Guelph. There are so many foods right now that are being genetically engineered, but the two issues she would like to address this morning most of all would be the genetically engineered salmon and the new EnviroPig.
EnviroPig. Lucy, welcome to the show this morning.
Thanks, Andy. Hello. Hi, Pam.
Hi.
And I know you were listening during Michael Schmidt's interview just moments ago. He is holding that news conference live right now as we speak in Owen Sound. Here's a man who feels so passionately about this that he's been on a hunger strike, has lost 22 pounds over the last 14 days. I know you feel strongly about this same general subject of industry controlling the food we eat and such words as Frankenfood and genetically modified.
Yes, well, I've been working and researching around this issue of genetic engineering for a long time now, and it's just one of many issues that people are concerned with in our food system now. But I do the work on this specific issue of genetically engineered foods, plants, and now even animals, where genes are moved around from one organism directly into another, and we have a series of important concerns about what that means.
Now, Lucy, just tell us in a nutshell, what is biotechnology? What is genetic engineering?
Genetic engineering is something completely new. The industry has tried to say that it's just part of a continuum of what we've always been doing, which is plant breeding, creating new plants and animals for the benefit of all. This is the basis of our food system, is farmer research. But genetic engineering comes from the laboratory. It's a very specific technology that allows scientists to move genes from one organism directly into another, even unrelated species, or even from different kingdoms. So we have this example, which isn't on the market, but illustrates very well, of a tomato with a fish gene in it. And it's obvious that we would never be able to do this without this new technology. The reproductive capacities of organisms don't allow us to move genes around like genetic engineering can.
Let me ask you, Lucy, because in a couple of moments we're going to have to take a short break, but I want to clear this up first. What would be the agenda that industry would have to do that? Why would they want to toy with the seeds that our farmers plant? What is the perceived agenda, and what is the real agenda?
Well, we know that without question, both the perceived and real agenda is profit-making. That's the goal of corporations, and food is something that everyone has to consume. Seeds are really powerful, and with genetic engineering, corporations can claim ownership over new genetic sequences and essentially ownership over seeds. So seeds have become just another product like others, and this is the goal behind genetic engineering. Of course, it's prettied up with promises of feeding the world and solving some of the biggest challenges we have in our food system, but that's a whole other question.
Well, let me just ask Pam to jump in. Well, give me the 1, 2, 3, the marketing agenda, the thing that industry would tell us why we want to genetically modify the foods. It's so that...
Well, it's exactly what Lucy just said. They make promises that they're going to feed the world with this technology. They make promises that they're going to use fewer sprays with this technology. They just make all sorts of claims that are just not true. Correct, Lucy?
Absolutely. And we see that many of the promises that have been made haven't come true. And others, the technology is actually failing in many respects.
Now, Monsanto is one of the big players in genetic engineering, and on their website, I don't know if it's still there, but they claim that they're promoting sustainability. And the only reason why it's sustainable, I suppose, is just to keep their shareholders happy.
Well,
that
Monsanto
makes it sustainable.
Yeah, Monsanto is the largest seed company in the world now. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they want to argue that genetic engineering helps us towards sustainable agriculture. But there's very many reasons why we would say that's completely opposite to what's happening. And this is one reason why organic farmers, for example, reject outright the use of genetic engineering. It's prohibited in organic farming.
Lucy, let me ask you for a real short comment before we go to the break. How dangerous is it to go down the path of Frankenfood, of genetically modifying the food that we eat?
I would say it's very dangerous. Certainly in terms of what it means for our society and environment and the health risks, we just have no idea.
Before we go to the break, I just want to give a quote to lead into what we're going to get into after the break, which is about the genetically engineered salmon and pig. And there are a lot of very powerful groups around the world that support you in your efforts. You're not the only group out there criticizing genetic engineering. And one of them is the Institute of Science and Society. In a recent article about the genetically engineered salmon, Professor Cummins said, in the absence of feeding studies, the commercial release of GM salmon is too hazardous to consider. Powerful words.
Wow. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to talk about Frankenfood. It should scare you skinny, and it will. When we come back in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. How dangerous is it to go down the path of Frankenfood, of genetically modifying the food that we eat?
I would say it's very dangerous. Certainly in terms of what it means for our society and environment and the health risks, we just have no idea.
I say if we would return to raw milk, which is produced under proper conditions, we would avoid so many diseases in children, which also would clearly reduce the apparent need for vaccinations.
The show is London Today. My name is Andy Udman. I really have three guests this morning. Pam Colleen in studio. And Pam, our guest on the phone is?
Is Lucy Sherratt. She's the coordinator for the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network out of Ottawa.
And the other clip you heard is that of Michael Schmidt. And I want to remind you, if you have just joined us, just want to remind our listeners that Michael Schmidt is holding a news conference even as we speak on his farm in Owen Sound. He has been on a hunger strike for 14 days now, has lost 22 pounds because he feels so strongly that we ought to have the choice in Ontario to be able to buy milk right from God's hand, as I like to say, right from the cow, untouched by industry. So we're just delving into this whole subject of how industry affects our food, modifies our food, and why the terms, we've developed these terms, Frankenfood, and genetically modified seeds that we're planting. And Pam, during the break, you were describing fish farming, for example, today, and how industry now controls it and what we ought to know about some of this food that we eat.
Well, fish farming, first of all, is not very environmentally sound, and we're seeing some, you know, fallout from fish farms out in British Columbia, for example, and how the lice that is forming in these highly unhygienic conditions are affecting the wild salmon and basically, you know, wiping out, you know, some of the salmon that should be coming back every year, and they're, you know, not seen now. So there's some dangers to the fish farming. But with regards to the genetically engineered salmon, that's a whole other ball game here. And Lucy's going to be talking to us about that. And one of the questions I have for Lucy is about the sustainability of this technology, the sustainability of this science, and how can it possibly be sustainable when they're producing eggs off the coast of Prince Edward Island here in Canada and plan on actually raising the salmon off the coast of Panama.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's this ludicrous plan from the company that wants to see genetically modified Atlantic salmon approved, and their plan is the opposite of what people see as sustainable local food systems. And their plan is, as you say, they want to produce genetically modified Atlantic salmon eggs on Prince Edward Island and then ship those eggs to Panama to grow them out and process them and then ship the processed fish back to the United States to those consumers. And of course, their larger plan is to produce the fish wherever they can and sell it to whoever. But we see right off the bat that this genetically modified fish is not designed for an ecological food system. It's designed for an industrial food system.
Lucy, let me just jump in and ask you, what evidence, because I can sometimes when I'm sitting here, my radar can just hear what our audience is thinking in some cases. And some of our audience right now is saying, okay, so you produce these fish eggs in PEI and you ship them to Panama. What's wrong with all that? What evidence is there, Lucy, so far, that this direction in our food production, genetically modified foods and industry-controlled food, is not good for us?
Well, you're exactly right to ask this question, as are the listeners. And there's certainly evidence that we see so far with genetically modified crops on the ground about what can go wrong. One of the major things that was predicted as a problem that has come true is this problem of contamination, where these genetically modified crop plants, which are living organisms, ground through seed and pollen, and they self-replicate. So we can't control genetically modified organisms once we release them into the environment. And we can't recall them if there's a problem that's an unpredicted problem. And this has happened in a few ways. And it's farmers that pay the cost of this problem right off the bat.
Let me just jump in. Pam was telling me about a certain farmer last night on the phone when we were chatting about the show today.
Right, and the classic example happened right here in Canada with Percy Schmeiser, and that case went to the Supreme Court. Maybe, Lucy, you can give us a Reader's Digest version of what happened with Percy.
Well, the core of the problem that was Percy's case is that, as we discussed earlier, corporations can patent genetic sequences. So the technology of genetic engineering allows corporations to claim ownership over seeds. And they can and do take farmers to court if they think that farmers have planted, have saved the genetically modified corporate seeds without permission, without buying them. Because, of course, the goal of these genetically modified seeds is to produce a product that a company like Monsanto can can sell to farmers a seed for 1 year, but the farmer has to come back to the company for the second year. They're not allowed to save that seed. And, of course, seed saving is the basis of food security in our entire food system.
Let me just jump in and ask you about a detail in the Percy Schmeiser case. It's not like he went over to the field where the Monsanto crop was growing and stole some of the seed.
Yeah, Percy had said that the contamination was the source of Monsanto's genetically modified canola seed on his property. That, and certainly there's lots of evidence across the prairies of how, you know, canola seeds fall off trucks, and this is where he saw the pattern of contamination. There's so many ways that contamination can happen, and this is why the genetically modified fish, for example, this is something we know will happen, and so the consequences of that we can also predict, and that's why an organism like a fish also is definitely a huge environmental risk, and again, it's unsustainable.
Well, let's talk about safety, because I think a lot of consumers are probably thinking, what if I eat this fish, and are there going to be any health concerns? To date, have there been any feeding studies whatsoever? And who is, you know, kind of, what kind of research is being done? Is it marketing-based science? Is it real science? Or is it just industry-funded science?
The basic problem with the question of health impacts of genetically modified foods is that we really don't know because the science hasn't been done. Health Canada relies on corporate science only when they decide to approve a genetically modified food for human consumption.
Lucy, let me just jump in, because once in a while I hear something and I go, Andy, did you really hear what you just heard? Would you repeat what you just said, because I find it shocking?
Health Canada only relies on corporate science, science produced and submitted by the companies that want their genetically modified product approved. That science is classified as confidential business information, and the Canadian public doesn't have access to it, and neither do independent scientists.
Now, Lucy, I was at a meeting at the University of Guelph a couple of years ago, and it was organized by Dr. Ann Clark, and Dr. Arpad Pusztai was there with his wife, Susan, and he did a whole presentation on his research on the genetically engineered potato. And after the meeting was done, scientists were there, who were conducting science on behalf of the biotechnology industry. And they voiced their very serious concern over research that they had done, that they had spent years conducting. And the research got basically swept under the carpet. Their names were not recognized for this research. And the reason why the research was not being acknowledged was because the outcome of the research didn't suit the needs of the biotechnology industry. How common is this?
Well, I don't know how common it is. Certainly, we know that independent science is not being done generally on genetically modified foods, that the work of Arpad Pusztai and those scientists that you mentioned, scientists are having a really hard time finding funding to do work that might come out with a critical outcome. And one of the worrying things, too, is that actually when we do see corporate science, when it is released, which is very rare, but it has happened that we've found the corporate science behind the genetically modified foods on the shelf, that it's often criticized quite heavily as being of bad quality and having some very real problems with it, that it's not actually very good science. And this is what we see with the GM fish, for example. We have that information to show us that actually the science is really shoddy in the case of the GM fish, and that is really worrying, because that's the type of science, or is it, that we're using to approve genetically modified foods right now.
Lucy, we have to jump in because we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask you this. How do we know if we are eating genetically modified food? Is all the food that we see in our grocery store labeled to warn us, listen, folks, this is genetically modified food. This is the food that Pam Colleen's been warning you about. How do we know? We'll be back in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
How dangerous is it to go down the path of Frankenfood, of genetically modifying the food that we eat?
I would say it's very dangerous, certainly in terms of what it means for our society and environment and the health risks. We just have no idea.
I say if we would return to raw milk, which is produced under proper conditions, we would avoid so many diseases in children, which also would clearly reduce the need the apparent need for vaccinations.
Okay, Pam Colleen, now that we've scared people silly about Frankenfood and genetically modified food, obviously, if there is such a product in our stores, it comes with a big poison label, red arrows, and a speaker just above it warning, this food is genetically modified. Be careful. Pam Colleen was right. How do we know that food? Where do we?
Well, you know, first of all, 70% of the food in the middle aisles of a grocery store has at least one genetically engineered ingredient in it. And keep in mind, these foods have not been tested properly for human safety whatsoever. In Europe, the genetically engineered foods are indeed labeled. In Canada, I think it's over 80% of the population has asked for labeling of this food, and the Canadian government has turned us down because they think we're too stupid to know the difference between GE food and non-GE food.
Lucy, not that I would ever question Pam Colleen, but that description is so outrageous, I have to ask you, surely that's not what we're dealing with, is it?
Well, unfortunately, Pam is right that genetically modified foods are not labeled in Canada or the United States, though they're labeled in at least 40 other countries. And so it's really hard for people to avoid genetically modified foods if they're buying packaged foods. All soy, canola, and corn ingredients, these are ingredients that people would need to avoid if they're buying packaged foods. Organic farming prohibits genetic engineering, and so certified organic products are a way that consumers can avoid genetic engineering. At this point, really, it's only corn, canola, and soy, and cottonseed oil that people will find in the grocery store. There's no genetically modified fruits and vegetables, with the possible exception of some genetically modified sweet corn in Ontario, unfortunately.
We're almost out of time. Pam wants to ask you about this lovely beast called...
The EnviroPig out of the University of Guelph. I understand there's some science that just isn't working for them.
Well, this genetically modified pig that comes from the University of Guelph is a huge problem because the university has asked for approval from Health Canada, from Environment Canada, and any approval of this genetically modified pig that has genes from genetic material from mouse and E. coli bacteria, any approval of this genetically modified pig will cause a huge problem for hog farmers who are already in a really bad economic state. Consumers are not going to be accepting pork and pork products if this genetically modified meat is on the shelf. And we think that certainly in the London area, consumers and farmers need to be talking about this problem so that we can stop this genetically modified pig from entering the food system.
Well, we have a lot of hog farmers in the area, and you also have the support of the National Farmers Union. Sean McGivern has stepped forward to help you out with this campaign about the EnviroPig, correct?
Both the National Farmers Union National and the Ontario National Farmers Union have very strong statements against the genetically modified pig as a totally unnecessary product, and one that would be really destructive to farmers' bottom line.
Lucy, some listeners have just joined us in the last few minutes. Can you, in the last minute or so that we have left, just summarize what you would like to say to our listeners about Frankenfood and how much we need to be aware, number one, and number two, what we can do to deal with some of these concerns?
Yeah, I think it can seem overwhelming, this issue. It sounds technical, and it sounds like a lot has happened without any of our input. But I think we can still make a lot of change. And there's some very serious genetically engineered products like the fish, the pig, or genetically modified alfalfa that are on the table right now that could be approved really soon. And we have the chance to stop that. And that's something that we are very serious about doing with people who are concerned. And the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network has a lot of information on these issues, and we have actions that people can take with us.
Okay, we always ask our guests to share a website because that's what our listeners want after a show like this.
That's great, thanks. The website for the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network is cban.ca.
One more time?
cban.ca, cban.ca.
Terrific.
Now, Lucy, I know you have some updates that you'd like to share with us down the road. There are some things happening in the near future. Do you want to just give us a couple of sound bites, and then we'll have you back on so you can tell us what happens?
Sure. Well, one thing that's extremely alarming is that the Canadian government is actually holding consultations right now with industry stakeholders to allow for contamination of our food system with genetically modified foods that are approved in other countries that are not approved in Canada. And this is something that we will be spreading the word about over the next month.
Great. Okay. Well, we have to have you back on then.
Lucy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, Pam, just in case people are wondering, who is this Lucy person?
Lucy Sherratt, and her website is www.cban.ca. So it's cban.ca.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.
That was awesome. Frightening, but awesome. Thank you so much. We have just a couple of moments left, Pam. As I mentioned earlier, Michael Schmidt, the farmer from Owen Sound, is having a news conference as we speak. He's on a hunger strike to try to convince the Ontario government to clear the way legally for the sale of raw milk in Ontario, suggesting that pasteurizing milk kills much of its nutritional value, and we would simply not have the large problem we have with so many diseases, so many concerns like asthma in our children if they only drank raw milk. I just want to share the last portion of the interview that I did a little earlier this morning. Michael, you're not one to draw attention to yourself, to your own health, to your sacrifices. You've been on this crusade for so long. How long have you been on this hunger strike?
It's 14 days.
Michael, your voice sounds strong, but how are you feeling and how is your health? How much weight have you lost?
I have lost 22 pounds by now. I certainly feel the effects of not eating food. But when you really look at the overall impact, it is minor compared to what the most of the people, you know, will feel down the road when their rights are taken away. And that is why I think it is such a crucial action in order to wake people up.
Okay, just as a closing comment, can you address those people who are hearing this who have children, or who don't have children, who hear your comment that drinking pasteurized milk is terrible for their health? Can you give us your best case in 1 minute?
The dairy industry, as it has developed in the last 30 years, is on a very dangerous path of simply looking at profits instead of real quality. Today, the dairy industry is looking simply of sterilizing quality of milk with no life forces left in the milk. And what all we try to do is that we simply return to a sanity in our food production so that people don't get sick from pasteurized or raw milk, which is produced under very, very questionable conditions. We want milk produced for human consumption in a proper, in a humane way, and that is why I rather encourage people not to drink milk instead of pasteurized milk in order to protect their health.
So let me just ask that question in a slightly different manner. What would be the difference in our health, do you think, in Canada, in North America today, if we all drank raw milk instead of pasteurized milk?
Considering, again, and I want to stress that, if the milk is produced for human consumption, you would see a dramatic increase in health, an increase in a reduction of chronic diseases in small children, an improved immune system, where we don't need to push vaccinations in order to protect them against childhood diseases. You will find stronger children with better teeth, with a much healthier complexion, and with less stomach cramps and ear infections. So there is a direct link to the immune system and to chronic diseases.
Michael Schmidt, the farmer, holding a news conference even as we speak on a hunger strike. I'm Pam Colleen. If a society were to decide that what he was saying is true, we'd be throwing a parade for him. We'd be putting him in a hall of fame.
We need more farmers like Michael. We need real food. Our farm is indeed our pharmacy, and that's where we get our medicine for our health. And unfortunately, because industry has changed the nature of nature so dramatically, this is why we're seeing so much disease today. It's not rocket science why we see so many sick people out there.
Okay, you have a nutrition boot camp this weekend.
Yep.
And give us your website.
Yeah, my nutrition boot camp is Saturday afternoon at the Central Library. My website is pamkilleen.com, and I'll be talking about the importance of real food.